Greetings. Welcome to Shnayim Mikra, podcast sponsored by the Orthodox Union and hosted at OU.org, in which we examine one aliyah per podcast of the current Parashat HaShavua. My name is Yitzhak Et Shalom, and it's an honor to be studying Parashat Vayishlach with you here in this wonderful new and yet old form. In the previous podcast, I was so excited about the approach of the Rashbam, which I always find intriguing, that I just ran through a stop sign and covered both Sheni and Shlishi in one podcast. So I'd like to take a look now at some of the nuances towards the end of Shlishi, just to take a peek at it. There's an interesting observation, and this really constitutes what we might call a vort, that has its roots in at least one of the passages that's used is in our context. But it really helps us understand something about language. One of the general problems with translation is that even though words are non-idiomatic, language is idiomatic. In other words, you have words which clearly are local to a language and can't be translated. For instance, I remember years ago hearing friends who had come back from a trip to Israel, and they wanted to talk Hebrew, and when they wanted to say cool it in the jargon of the 60s, they said karze. And of course, that's a fairly meaningless thing, because it's a totally idiomatic phrase. But nonetheless, even words that have a direct translation, their usage is idiomatic. An example of that is the word acharon and rishon. Acharon, which means in translation last or final, does not necessarily have that meaning. And here's an example of it. If you take a look in Parak Lamed Gimel Pasuk Bet, you will see Vayasem et hashfachot v'dialdehen rishona v'et Leah v'yiladeha acharonim v'et Rachel v'et Yosef acharonim. He put the shfachot first, the shfachot and their children, and he put Leah and her children acharonim, which would mean there would be nobody in back of them, because acharon is the final one. And Rachel v'et Yosef acharonim. And Rachel and Yosef were acharonim. And if you think about it, he's even behind them, because then it says v'uavar lifnehem, which means then he passed in front of them, which means that the order was the shvachot and their children, Bilhah, Zilpah, Dan, Asher, Naphtali, and Gad, and then Leah, and Reuven, Shimon, etc., and then Rachel and Yosef, and then Yaakov in back, and then Yaakov walks in front of them. So the word acharon here really doesn't have an absolute meaning, but rather a relative meaning. Acharon meaning behind or later than something else. We have several examples of that sort of thing happening with all sorts of adjectives. For instance, the word ahuv and sanu, or ohev and sone, to love or to hate. Often when it appears in a common context, it does not mean an absolute love or hatred, but rather a favoritism. And an example of that, and this is something that we can use to come back to the story of Rachel and Leah, and that will take us back to the story of Yaakov and Esav, all of whom are in this scene, so this will be very instructive, is when it says that Vayahav Yitzchak et Esav, well, we'll start with the later text. In Dvarim Chaf Aleph, the Torah describes the scenario where a man is married to two wives, and the one he favors one over the other, and the one who's less favored gives birth to the firstborn son, and he has to award the bechora to the firstborn son, even though it's of the least favored wife. And there seems to be, and the Rishonim bring this out, a subtle critique against Yaakov. See the Sforno there; he takes a different take, but a subtle critique of Yaakov for favoring Yosef over Reuven. In any case, in that context, says Chiyeli Ish Shtei Nashim Ha'achat Ahuva VeHa'achat Snua. If a man has two wives, one is ahuva and one is snua, one is beloved and one is hated. How could a man be married to somebody who's hated? So it's certainly possible. It's possible that he was forced into the marriage. It's possible that he doesn't have the financial wherewithal to divorce her. These things are possible. But the far likelier reading of the text is one who he prefers and one who he prefers less, which we then read back to the worst story of that, which is of course Leah and Rachel. Vayahav gam et Leah et Rachel mi Leah. When Yaakov married Rachel, it says he loved her more than Leah. And then when Leah sees Vayar Leah kisnuahi, or Vayar Hashem kisnua Leah, Hashem saw that Leah was snua. It doesn't mean she was hated. It means she was less favored. She was the less favored wife. which then takes us back to the signal pasuk. After Yaakov and Esav are born, we have Vayahav Yitzchak et Esav Kitzayid b'fiv v'Rivka ohevet et Yaakov. And the Rishonim, to some extent, grapple with this statement because it makes it sound as if Rivka has no love for Esav, and that's the way that Sforno takes it. It means that that Yitzchak certainly loved Esav, Yaakov, but he also loved Esav. But the simplest way to read it is that Yitzchak's preference was for Esav, as played out in later stories we see, and Rivka's preference is for Yaakov. If that's the case, then we see that the word Ahuv and Sanu are not absolute, but are rather relative, and that plays out here in a very what seems like innocuous context. We talk about the word acharon. Acharon doesn't mean last, but rather later. Not a superlative, but rather a comparative. And that helps understand a somewhat difficult pasuk in Sefer Haggai. Sefer Haggai, a little bit of introduction. Haggai was a Navi who operated in the end of the 6th century BCE, around the year 520, 519, in Yerushalayim. And according to Ezra, Perek Hey, Pasuk Aleph and Bet, Haggai and Zechariah were the Nevi'im who gave the religious, moral, and spiritual support for the rebuilding of the Mikdash, which was contested and was a very difficult thing, and they had to deal with the Persian government, and they had trouble there also. And Beidayin, etc., Yoshua ben Yotzadak, Zerubbabel ben Shaltiel, and Yoshua ben Sadak, Mishra, Shariv, Lemivne, they began to rebuild or to build the Mikdash, and with the Vimhon, Sadein, Mahon, helping them was Haggai and Zechariah. So in the Haggai, when he's trying to encourage the people to build the Mikdash, the people are saying, oh, it's so pathetic relative to what we heard about or what we saw for old people. We saw of the old Mikdash. He says, Gadol ya kavod habayit hazeh ha'acharon min habayit harishon. This bayit will be greater, and all the gold will come, etc., etc. But he uses the word acharon. And supposedly the Gaon Mivilna claimed this is a very problematic pasuk because that means that there's only going to be two batei mikdash, the Rishon and the Acharon. Right? And Acharon means the final one. But he said rather, if you look at our pasuk, you could say that Acharon is not an absolute term, but rather a relative term, and therefore Acharon just means the latter one. And then he gave another proof from Parshat Shemot, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Moshe, the doubting Moshe, three signs to use to convince Zikne Yisrael that he's really been sent by Hashem. And the first sign is the stick. The second sign is the tzarat. And then after those two signs, he says, Vayayim lo yaminu l'kol ha'ot ha'rishon yaminu l'kol ha'ot ha'charon. If they don't believe the first sign, they'll believe the second sign. Sounds like that's it. And then Vayayim lo yaminu gam l'shnei otot ha'ela. And then God says, if they don't believe either of these signs, then you take the water and you spill it out, and it'll become blood. Shafachta ha'dam ma'im ha'vashave al-adam. And that'll be the sign that will really convince them. Okay, very nice. And then the Gaon beautifully points out that in the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Bnei Israel to take a korban and to daub the blood on the door and says, V'haya ha-dam la'ot al-habatim. Literally, the dam is going to be a sign on your houses. However, in a very clever way, the Gaon says, aha, supposedly the Gaon said this, but many things that are purportedly the Gaon, we don't know if he really said it, but supposedly he said this, V'ya adam lachem liot al abatim, that the blood will be a sign on the batim. Not the your houses, but rather the batim mikdash. Just like dam was the third sign given to Moshe, even though the second was called an acharon. Similarly, even though the second bite was called a bayit acharon, there will still be a third mikdash, which, of course, is what we are all praying for its rebuilding. Okay, we will pick up with a proper study of the fourth Aliyah on the next podcast. In the meantime, everybody should have a wonderful day.